The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everyone, Matt Michaels here with The DeFalco Files, and joining me as always is our fearless leader, the FSW owner, creator, and sometimes cook, I would assume, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing real good. Unfortunately, we can't have on as a special guest today the number one wrestler in Arizona history, Evan Daniels, but we have a suitable replacement.
It's nice to be a close second.
Yes.
That's right. We have the monster among men. And I can take that from Braun Strowman, because I think Alexander Hammerstone is definitely more of a monster than that man will ever be. Hammerstone, how you doing?
To be fair, not to cut you off, I'm doing well. But to be fair, Braun Strowman is trying to steal Beef Castle from me, so he could suck it.
See? I guess let's start. Where were you in terms of your career, Hammerstone, when you first came across Joe DeFalco?
Somewhere between grass and goose shit was the level of green I was at. So I was basically not much more than a good-looking young guy with some potential. I was I only had a couple, maybe dozen matches under my belt, and I really didn't know much about what I was doing, but I was able to get a chance, and that's all I needed from Joe.
Joe, what struck your eye? Do you remember the first time you saw him and how it kind of came to be that you kept inviting him back to FSW?
Yeah, it's kind of cloudy how I got to him, but I remember going on YouTube and seeing him. I'm not sure what led me to see him, because, you know, he was working in some companies that we knew some of the guys from. So that's a little gray area, but I remember checking him out and I'm like, hey, you know, I was probably looking to bring in profit for a big title run. And I saw this guy and it said Alexander Hammerstone. And I looked at him, I'm like, big kid, looks good, real good shape, and, you know, seemed to do some power moves good. I'm like, hey, this guy looks to me, you know, like he's got some potential. And I'm pretty sure I reached out to him. You know, he could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the first thing was me reaching out to him to see if he was interested in coming down.
No, yeah, that's true.
Were you getting opportunities at that point, or was this something where, hey, this guy's reaching out to me, like, I am absolutely getting in my car and going to Vegas? Or what was your...
Well, it was my first out-of-state booking, I believe. I might have done something with Championship Wrestling from Hollywood at this point, but if I had, it was very minimal. So when he hit me up, I was definitely excited about it, but I was really nervous, because up to this point, I'd kind of stuck around just locker rooms of people I was really familiar with. Most of the matches I had at this point were people that I trained with, you know, two or three times a week. So I was still at the stage where we, you know, get our match together and go through stuff, and we're really familiar with each other.
Yeah.
So to be invited to go out of state, obviously that's the goal, but I do remember being super nervous at the time. And almost, like, I agreed to it, and then the guy I was driving with was named Jay Garland. And I was almost trying to talk my way out of going, like, oh, yeah, I don't know if I could go. And And eventually Jay turned to me and he's like, listen, one of the most important things in wrestling is that when you travel and you go to other locker rooms, you have the respect of your peers in other locker rooms. So if you want to be the top dog in Arizona, that's fine, but you're not going to get very far. And from that point forward, I tried to make every FSW show I could for, you know, basically the last 7 years or so.
Do you remember him walking in, Joe? Was he what you thought you saw on the video?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in comparison, I had met Graves at a show we were doing when we were FSW Arizona, and we brought in, you know, the FSW crew with Ricker and Alcatraz and Modest, and the Arizona crew was like Chuck Palumbo and Johnny the Bull. And I remember meeting Graves there and utilizing him, and Graves almost ended his tenure extremely quick in FSW, had two or three matches. They were the shits, and it was like, man, this Graves guy, you know, not sure what's up with him. And then the last booking that it looked like he'd be over with, we ended up putting in a match with Willie Mack, and basically that was the match that put Graves over. But from day one, you know, the idea with Hammerstone, you know, he was the rookie of the year. So, you know, obviously he stepped in and, you know, definitely opened up my eyes to the possibilities. You know, then with Graves, you know, we put him into the Gods of War tag team, you know. Hammerstone, you know, had the hammer, looked like Thor. Graves had the shield. He looked like a guy from 300. And we kind of went from there. Because I remember early on some of the veteran guys not being too happy. I remember it was Jay Cash, Kid Vegas. It was like, oh, I got to put over this guy, you know. And it was like, I remember, you know, one of them did a good job putting him over, and the other guy kind of got lambasted by our champion at the time, Tyshawn Prince, because they were friends, and felt that he sandbagged Hammerstone. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I blew my back out that night, like really bad.
Shit. Wow. Wow. What goes through your mind when you're obviously, I mean, you're trying to make an impression and then something happens like that. And I'm not saying particularly your thoughts about, you know, what was done to you, but more so, oh shit, you know, I blew out my back, you know, I'm traveling all this way. Did you feel like this was kind of paying the dues essentially?
Yeah, I mean, so honestly, I was in like such a naive place that I didn't even like recognize the situation for what it was. You know, looking back at it, it was very obviously done purposely, because going over this match, he goes, hey, we're trying to get you over as like a power guy. So maybe like I'll give you a vertical suplex and then you'll kind of like sell up pissed off and then you'll give it back to me for like way longer. And when I went to give it back to him, there was just no help whatsoever, right? So it was like basically the opposite. He was trying to make himself look strong, and then when it was my turn, make me look like shit.
Yeah. Damn.
But honestly, I didn't think of it like, oh, man, I'm paying my dues, or, oh, I deserve that. Like, I was like, man, I guess I did something wrong. I guess I didn't, I guess I wasn't strong enough, or I didn't base him right, you know, because I was still at that stage where I just honestly had never been in a situation like that. So I was just thinking, oh, it's my fault, my fault. And my whole thing was, after that move, we took the bump and I blew out my back so bad, like after the match I couldn't walk. I literally had to have my friend take my boots off for me. But during the match, at that point, I just went into like, you know, fight or flight mode, because we're about halfway through, so I just had to finish the match.
Yeah,
so I just like got the adrenaline rush to keep going, and that's all I could think about. And it wasn't until like looking back on it, I was like, that something didn't go right there.
Holy crap. So he dead weighted you basically. So you, wow.
That's... I mean, so I can't, I obviously can't say for sure, but all I can say is, I've suplexed much heavier men, with much less effort.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, does that speak to the example Tyshawn basically set then by stepping up and, you know, reprimanding for something as stupid as that, to where you see Hammerstone now as a locker room leader? Do you see that kind of, you know, maybe early on that some of these experiences that he had for Hammerstone would influence on how he would be towards other guys in the locker room?
Well, we always pride ourselves on having a pretty good locker room. You know, guys, you know, obviously there's a few recently that have slipped through the cracks that you find out they're pieces of shit.
Yeah.
But in regards to things, when guys come in and they kind of question, there's a guy now who always wants to work for us. And back in the day, you know, I had him come. I was going to have him come in. They were going to work a tag match against the Players Club. And then everything was kind of set. And he was like, hey, bro, so when do we get our win back? And it's like, what are you talking about? And it's like, and the guy has it. And he's doing very well in SoCal. And I've never used him after that just because of that mentality. It's like, you need to come in and do what I need you to do. And when you do what I need you to do, more opportunities will come to pass. You know, the reason Hammerstone got a little more, because every time I needed him to do what we needed him to do, you know, it worked out well. You know, at the time, there was another really good young up-and-coming rookie, Che Cabrera. And we kind of played that into a gimmick storyline over in Mesquite, where I think Matt and Rebby Hardy gave you the Rookie of the Year award. It led to a fight, and it set up a match later on with the Gods of War against Che and Tito, the Pistoleros. And that was trying to build things and trying to, you know, take the younger guys, as we've always done, is find somebody and continue to, you know, elevate them. And you know, at the time, we always joked, you know, Hammerstone was the pretty boy, but Graves did all the work. And, you know, when we decided that we were going to break them apart, you know, that was kind of what we were pushing toward the storyline of how Graves is getting no notoriety in the tag team, yet he's the one doing all the work. So getting back to your question, you know, about respect and things like that, without a doubt, Hammerstone, you know, we talk about, hey, we got our local guys, and then we got the guys we use from out of town. Whenever I talk about Graves and I talk about Hammerstone, you know, they're local guys to me. Yeah. You know, because they are more FSW than a lot of the guys who actually live in Las Vegas. So, you know, we quickly knew that Hammerstone was going to be a guy that had big things coming to him.
Do you, Alex, do you think that early on getting that opportunity to tag with Graves, since you guys were friends, and did that help the chemistry of, you know, making you feel a little more comfortable and confident in the ring?
Yeah, for sure. Just because, you know, I think what, like, if I looking back at my role in FSW, like, I came in and I kind of floated around for a little bit before they were sure what to do with me. And then I kind of got pushed into a bit of a win streak for a while. But then it became evident, like, okay, we can't put the fire behind him too fast, because if you would have put me too fast, too far, I would have fell flat on my face. So realistically, the tag division was like that perfect area for me to hang out, not due to any damage to my character or how I was presented, but still give me like, okay, you better use this year or, you know, year and a half to just learn and get better, because when it's over, if you're not better, you're just going to float into obscurity. So I think it was, you know, a perfect place for me to hang out for a while and to, you know, to spend time getting over in a way where it did open the opportunity to whatever direction we wanted to go, whether it was, you know, break up and ride that momentum and be a babyface, or the easy, you know, just split the team apart and become the biggest asshole in the company. We had both directions available for us, and we were able to choose which one was the right decision. So I was really happy doing that. I think it was a really fun time in my career. And like you alluded to, it was a good chance to just learn, to listen. There's a lot of people at FSW besides Graves who were always there after the matches to just give you good advice. So yeah, I think it was the perfect place to go, especially considering the timing that we did it.
Was it, you know, and you got to remember.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was gonna say you got to remember back in that time. You know, we had guys like Brian Cage, Sean Ricker, Alcatraz, Tyshawn. You know, if Hammerstone was running in the singles, being as inexperienced as he was, you know, there was no way we could have really gave him a solid push, even though the crowd was kind of behind him. So being in the tag team division, you know, it got him a lot of opportunities. It got him on every show, but it also kept him away from the big guns while we were trying to watch him get better. And then hopefully down the road, you know, he would be able to step up and, you know, take out those guys later on, which, again, he eventually did.
Was there a tag match early on with Graves that sticks out in your mind as, and this could go to both of you, that was something where either Hammerstone, you felt, yeah, this is clicking, this was a great match, or Joe, that impressed you in terms of, hey, man, you know, these guys both have such potential?
I can't think of any one match that, you know, stood out. I think it was just like a slow natural, in my mind, it was just slow natural progression, because like at first it was kind of like, hey, either of these guys is doing anything that important, let's put them together and see how it works. And it was almost like week to week, we slowly, okay, what if we did this tag spot? Oh, what if this move worked together? Oh, now we'll do the weapons. Now we'll do the paint. Now we have better music. Now, so it was just like, it was a very slow progression. I don't think there was like a moment where it's like, oh, now we're firing on all cylinders. It was just week by week, like we really started to like lean into it more and more and more.
Yeah, I agree the same. I can't really think of anything offhand, but I know they had matches with the following, and they had matches with Che and Tito, and they were all really, really solid matches. And it's funny because we talk about, you know, being tag team champions, and they were always the one team that I felt slipped through the cracks that never got a tag team title run. Because Hammerstone kind of really broke out with the tag that we decided we were going to do a cash in the case match. And in the past, the cash in the case match was, if you win the cash in the case, you can take on the No Limits champion anytime, any place, anywhere. And we decided we were going to shake it up a little bit. We ran a few of these in a row, and they were good and they were solid. But in a spot that we were looking to elevate Hammerstone, we decided to add a few other people in there. And then it became, you can go for whatever title that you want, tag team, No Limits, or heavyweight. And at the time, Sean Ricker, Eli Drake, and Cross, you know, were kind of just bandying about the championship. And we decided, or I decided, obviously, that we were going to give the opportunity to Hammerstone. Felt he was now ready to be put into that spotlight. But then there was always like, hey, if Hammerstone wins, you know, maybe him and Graves go after the tag titles, because they're, you know, a top tag team, haven't gotten that opportunity. And instead, we decided we were going to, you know, have him get involved in the Ricker Cross title match at the Silverton, And it ended up paying off because, you know, a lot earlier, you know, it's amazing if you just tuned in to Hammerstone 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you would have seen, you know, how solid he was on the microphone. 5 or 6 years ago, motherfucker never got a microphone. It was like between him and Graves, it's like, who's the worst promo of the two, you know? And when we were making the decision to put the title on Hammer, the question became, we needed to do a turn at that point, obviously. And initially, it was going to be Graves because of, you know, the jealousy, didn't go for the tag titles, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not sure if Alex brought it to me or we decided, because it was a pretty late decision to turn Hammerstone instead of Graves. And, you know, that worked brilliantly. The only problem was Hammerstone was so over that his first feud with Graves lasted like one match because at that time he was so more over than Graves. We thought it was going to be a big rivalry, but Hammerstone kind of really surpassed Graves at that point, and him being the heel and then cutting great promos all of a sudden, you know, made him the face of the company.
What are your recollections on that? How did you go from being a green as hell mic worker into the devastatingly good promo man you are now?
It was a lot of practice. And in between, you know, those, like, that year leading up to that, I did get a lot of opportunities elsewhere to work on those skills. But then, you know, from my perspective, you know, coming into that situation, like, I remember it, like, okay, obviously you guys are going to split up, Graves going to turn heel on you. Like, that's what, just, first of all, like, everyone would see that, like, he's naturally like the meaner, aggressive looking one. He's the more aggressive wrestler. Yeah. And they just thought, you know, oh, I don't use it for the cash in the case for the tag titles, he's going to turn on me. And then I was like, I think we really need to go the other way, just because, first of all, it's what they were expecting. But second of all, we were coming out of a thing where, you know, basically Cross had been running the show at the top for like the last year. And even before he embraced the fact that he was a babyface, he was getting babyface reactions because he was basically just a badass. He was just so fucking badass, and he wouldn't do anything that actually made him a heel, you know?
Yeah.
Like, being a badass and beating up baby faces that are less cool than you doesn't make you a heel. So that became in my eyes, watching that happen for a while. And then you had Eli Drake, who came in and played the role, but he didn't. He hadn't been invested in storylines long enough to really bring the heat in that storyline. So then I was like, I feel like the company and the fans are just waiting to have a top guy who they can fucking hate. So I just saw it as a huge opportunity for myself to kind of slide in there. And I'm glad I did, because it's so funny to me, because, like, I see these, I sometimes I really feel like the fans don't remember how much they loved me at one point. And I'm like, you motherfuckers really don't remember? Because, like, now it's gotten to the point now where, like, a lot of times I don't even try to cut a promo because they just fucking, they won't even let me because they're just booing the whole fucking time I have the microphone. But it's definitely fun because, like, to look back on how we went across that storyline, it was really fun. It was really well done.
And I, you know, as again, I always like to give credit where it's due. You know, going to those Evan Daniels promo classes really paid off for you.
One of a kind, my number one mentor.
I got to try to get like 10 Evan Daniels references in today, at least.
I think we're at like 3, so we got some work ahead of us.
Yeah, we still got some work to do.
You know, speak a little bit about the fans in terms of when you built yourself as a babyface. I mean, they admired you, they loved you. And then you have, I think that was a great call out in terms of Cross being someone who became a babyface. And arguably, you two were the top two babyfaces. Fans loved you guys. How is it, in terms of your mentality going into turning into a heel, to make sure it doesn't backfire on you? And like Joe kind of said, you know, gives you too much fandom instead of heat.
You know, I want to chime in first about Hammerstone as a heel.
Sure.
You know, the one thing is, when he first came and turned, there was still a large majority of the crowd that wanted to cheer him. And he did a phenomenal job of shutting those people down. That's why they hate him even more. Because, you know, you want to be a heel, that's great. But Kevin Cross never embraced the fact that he was a heel. He wanted to be loved. And Hammerstone didn't want to be the cool heel. He wanted to be the despised heel. And there was people that had loved him for so long that he would shut down any time they would try to say something positive. And that's going the extra mile. And that's something that, when I look back in our history of FSW, and we've had great champions, and I've said it, you know, love Cross, love Bay, but Hammerstone is my favorite FSW heavyweight champion because of everything that he did. And it's on record.
That means a lot. I mean, just the way, like, he kind of nailed it. Like, I watched people do it, and I understood that, like, if you're going to be a real heel, there's going to be people who say you're not a good wrestler.
Yeah.
Who decide, because they don't like you, they're going to go, dude, Hammerstone sucks. And it's because they started hating you so much. And you got to have thick enough skin to fucking get there. Because what that means is people are going to give a shit about baby faces that they might not normally give a shit about just because they're wrestling me. So it puts me in a position to, because if the crowd is, you know, lukewarm on the heat with me, and I'm at the top of the card, and then you put a mid-card babyface with me, they're going to want to see me beat them up. But if they fucking hate me, you could essentially put any babyface with me, and they want to see them beat me.
You could put some young boy in there and beat you, and they'd go crazy.
Like, yeah, like, thinking back to that, if, I mean, and no, like I said, this isn't a disrespect to Cross. It's just like, I feel like even in the peak of his, you know, heel run, if you would have put a young boy in there with Cross, the crowd would have been just like, yeah, eat him alive, kill him.
Yeah.
Because that's the way he was. He was just a monster that they liked. And I was just trying to be like a slime bag. It really comes down to, like, every chance you have to take the heelish route, you have to. And sometimes that means not having as cool of a match, or not cutting as cool of a promo, or not doing the storyline the cool way that always makes you look awesome. And, you know, but in the long term, that's what's going to give you, first of all, more longevity, but more notoriety, more flexibility to work with different opponents and so on.
I'm looking for the right term here. Is it something that inside of you, you kind of naturally, obviously, you know, you've watched and studied heels, but were you able to draw inside of you on the dickishness of what needed to be accomplished? And did that give you certain freedoms that you hadn't had before?
Oh, I mean, yeah, 100%. Because, like, when you're, you know, what are your baby face? I mean, certain things you shouldn't do, certain things you should. But, like, realistically, the whole of my baby face character wasn't much substance, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like I made so much of a drastic change. It's just that I started being more of a character in the first place. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it was just like drawing on real gripes and real emotions I had in the wrestling business and just, you know, portraying them outwards. And it is, you know, you know, the very beginning of it was just playing on, like, you know, what DeFalco alluded to with, you know, oh, Graves is the workhorse and I'm just the pretty boy. Like, there's a certain part of me that annoyed me. So then that was the first motivation to bring that out in my promos. And I tried to find something like that with everybody or every situation. And another thing I tried to do as a heel was build heat and then get to a point where I can tease the crowd that I was going to be a babyface and take it away from them. Because I tried to do that like two or three times during my run. And every time they're like hesitant, but when you start leaning into it, they're so ready for the top heel to turn baby again. And then when you pull it away from them, they get that much more mad. So it was just fun. Like, I was just always trying to be creative with things like that.
What was your mindset when you went into that match to win the first FSW Heavyweight Championship? Was that something you were, how did that come about in terms of, did you know well enough in advance, or was it kind of a nice little surprise?
It was a nice little surprise because, like, you know, me and Joe had talked about different ideas. We had talked about actually going through with it and doing the tag title victory with it. We had talked about doing that. And then we had talked about me either losing the case or me cashing in unsuccessfully and, you know, and being the first one to fail the cash in. Like, we talked about all different ideas, and it really came down to like pretty close to the actual matchup where we actually decided that we're going to put the belt on me. And it was I remember at that point in my career, like making a list of goals for the year. And it was like goal opponents, people I wanted to wrestle. And I remember writing down win the FSW championship, and it didn't seem like a realistic goal to me. Huh. Because just like, I know, like, you know, a lot of guys, you know, wrestle for the company and think like, oh, I want this, I want that, I want this. But people don't realize I was wrestling there for 4 years before I won the championship.
Right.
And what I had seen is what continues to this day. The FSW championship is a huge launching pad. Whoever wins that belt gets a contract,
right,
or is, you know, very well respected. Joe does a very good job of not playing pass around with that thing. He tries very well to book it correctly, book his champions correctly, and people take notice and people know who has that championship. So, it was a huge honor. To this day, it's still a huge honor to have held it. If I ever hold it again, it will still be a huge honor because that belt has always been respected. It's been protected. And, you know, I just wanted to do my part to continue that.
Joe, what was your thought process in feeling that he was ready for that title?
Well, it was all the hard work and everything that he had done along the way. And, you know, it was time, you know, as he said, you know, people who have the title, you know, they had it for a really long time. The only time we had it really short was when Eli Drake was going to win the title against Tyshawn Prince. And literally the day of the show, when he shows up at the arena where he is scheduled to win the championship, he said, "Hey, bro, I got some bad news," which isn't bad news for him. It was good news, but he had just signed a contract with WWE and was leaving in like 3 weeks. And I'm like, what the fuck? And we ended up still putting the belt on him, and then he lost it 2 weeks later, and then he went to, you know, down to the developmental center. Things didn't work out, and then he came back, and he was part of FSW. But at that point, it was fresh stuff. It was a fresh face. You know, Cross, he went 900 and something days without losing until we finally had Ricker and the entire locker room finally overcome Kevin Cross. It was a struggle, and the 43 guys almost beat Cross, but, you know, Ricker was able to overcome. Just saying.
So, Hammerstone, what are your memories about that steel cage match and working actually with Cross and Young Boy?
Well, shouldn't we talk about him losing the belt to Young Boy first to set up the steel cage match?
I was trying to avoid that for you, Hammerstone, but let's go there. What was the thought process into doing the title drop to Young Boy and then regaining it in the cage?
Let me start it off, because the story beforehand can lead into Hammerstone's, you know. So we were sitting. No, actually, we weren't sitting. We were outside the school. And I'm pretty sure Remy and crew were smoking some weed by their cars. And the bonus boys are probably there. And Remy Marcel says, hey, I got an idea. Because we have already signed the steel cage match. But 2 weeks before the steel cage match, we did have one more show at the FSW Arena. And, you know, what are we going to do? You know, the same bullshit WWE contract signing crap. It's like, we're not really going to do that, you know. So kind of wondering what Hammerstone's going to do. Remy's like, oh, I got this crazy idea. I'm like, okay, so why would it be different than all the crazy ideas you have that the majority I don't listen to? But most people think I listen to Remy all the time. It's just I peel out 10 out of every 1,000 ideas that he has. And he goes, what do you think about having Young Boy win the FSW Heavyweight Championship? And I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, you know, that is, I won't even say that word. That is moronic, idiotic, whatever. So I go home a couple days later. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, you know, as crazy as it is, that might be a pretty interesting idea. So I remember hitting up Cross first and telling him about it. And, of course, he was all for it because – in that situation, he wouldn't have to put over Hammerstone. So any non-loss for Cross is a good day. So then I hit up Alex, and I'm like, hey, Remy came up with this idea, and I think it ain't really that bad. I think it's, you know, pretty interesting. And I said, Cross will come in, and Young Boy, of all people, is going to beat you for the title. You're going to beat the fuck out of him. He's going to get almost nothing. And I remember in the match, he got one move, and Hammerstone no-sold it. Beat his ass. And I think he tried to do the referee got knocked out. Cross came in, hit him with the Saitos on a chair. And I just remember first when we set up the promo, because why would Young Boy come out? And it was... Hammerstone is going to offer an opportunity to somebody who has never wrestled him before. So now it eliminated a lot of the top guys in the locker room. So now you really have a lot of options. So when Young Boy came out, the crowd erupted, and it was crazy. And then Hammerstone's just beating the fuck out of him, pulling him up a couple times during the match. And then I think he went for the bicycle kick. He got out of the way, Young Boy. He ended up kicking the ref. The ref went down. Cross came out, crowd went bonkers, and that may have been the biggest pop I've ever heard in the FSW arena, because the crowd was counting 1, 2, they figured there was going to be a kick out, and they almost like hesitated on the 3, and they were just like stunned. And we now have the worst champion in FSW history.
So it's funny because when Joe originally pitched that to me, he doesn't explain the entire angle right off the bat. He just goes, hey, what do you think about a young boy at the next show? And I'm like, oh, why don't you go fuck yourself? And then, you know, to be fair, it's funny because, you know, after that happened, like some of the guys came up to me and they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe he made you do that. That's bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no. Joe did not make me do that. He never said, This is what I want you to do. He said, what do you think about this? How do you feel about it? You know, and obviously my first reaction, you know, being a wrestler, being full pride, being all these things is no, that's a bad idea. That's stupid. I don't want to do it. And then my second reaction was, I'm trying to cement myself as like the most over heel of all time. This is going to be a good way to do that. So, you know, I thought about it. And then I said, yeah, let's go for it. The part where it starts to fall apart is not everybody played their role correctly. And like, I told Jody about this ahead of time. I sat there and I was like, listen, we are gonna put you in the fucking history books. You need to do this. Like, I laid it out for him. You need to do this. You need to do this. Like, and, you know, to be fair, in the actual match, he did what he was supposed to do. He took a fucking ass beating. I told him, if you want to do this, we're not going to have a wrestling match. This is going to hurt a lot because I don't want it to look like a wrestling match. I want it to look like I'm beating the crap out of you. And I did. But, like, I think overall, I think it was still well executed. But there's just things I thought could have been better just because – at a certain point, Young Boy switched over from being Young Boy to cutting these promos where he was essentially saying, you know what? I think I do deserve to be in this spot, and I am going to fight with all my heart, and I'm going to prove the haters wrong. And I said, I told him from the get-go, your promos have to be scared. You have to be like in a situation where you know you accidentally got this belt, and you're fucked, and you don't know how you're going to survive in a cage.
Yeah.
So switching on the tough guy persona, like trying to be like this real fucking baby face fighting from underneath, I think took away a little bit from it.
Yeah.
And then some of the execution in the match was like a little weird because, like, you know, we just had conflicting ideas, you know, where Cross, you know, he wanted to play out that he wanted to keep embarrassing me by have Jody beat me instead of trying to beat me himself. So then at the end of the match, when he climbs out the cage, it's like, it kind of kills the storyline because now he's mad that I retained a title that he was never trying to win. But like overall, you watch the storyline, how it unfolded. It kept people's attention. Like Joe said, it was something that was way different. Nobody expected, nobody knew which direction it was going to go. And when it was all over, I had that much more heat. So I'm, you know, to this day, I got no regrets about it.
So you also get a chance here. It was at Mecca 2, I believe, where you actually got a chance to wrestle Moose. What is it like now, you know, to look at some of the guys that you got a chance then to wrestle after, you know, being champion and having the belt? You got to wrestle Moose, you got to wrestle Brody King, you got to wrestle Cobb, and I'm throwing in things from PCW Ultra as well, just to make the point that you grew to wrestling substantially, you know, guys who had a lot of experience, a lot of name recognition. What did it mean to your career to essentially get that seasoning that allowed you now to open up your talents into other places?
Actually, I'm going to butt in a second, because when we had put the Mecca together, we used a lot of the outside talent. And then the idea was we're going to start utilizing some of our top guys. And I remember using Hammerstone and saying, I want to have you work Sami Callihan. Like, to me, I felt that that would be a stepping stone. It's like, we knew how good he was, but I wanted to see myself personally if Hammerstone was good enough to hang with these national acts.
Yeah.
And is he as good as I think he is? And he went out there, and him and Callihan had one of the best matches of that show. And that's what catapulted him getting the opportunity to wrestle Moose, and then he wrestled Callihan again. And, you know, for me, that was the coming out party. You know, winning the titles, everything else was there. But when he wrestled Sami Callihan, I knew he was ready for the big league.
Do you kind of do you feel the same way? Was that, you know, reflective to you of, hey, you know, I can hang, man?
Yeah, and like you said, I'd started getting a little bit of that elsewhere around the same time. And it's funny because, like, local guys, like, you always hear the bitching of, like, oh, fucking Joe books these names, and then he just puts them with each other. And it's for two reasons. It's because, A, no one gives a shit about, you know, random guy wrestling some $2,000 wrestler. Like, yeah. It's like, why would I put you in that match? But the other thing is, if Joe spends all this money for a plane ticket, you know, the payday and the hotel, and then the match sucks, you know, that's pretty much a waste. And, you know, I'm smart enough to realize that. So I was never a crybaby, like, oh, put me with this guy, put me with this guy. But then when Joe made that decision on his own, I know how seriously he takes utilizing that, you know, that kind of talent, because the money it costs. So, it was definitely like a, okay, cool, like, let's put my work pants on type of moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then when the match delivers, you're, you know, just that much more happy. And then it's kind of sets a new precedent of, like, hey, that's the caliber of talent that I'm going to wrestle from now on. Like, don't put me with, you know, just random Joe Blow for the, you know, for the big casino shows. So it's, it was a cool moment all around.
Then when you were approached with the idea that it's time for Chris Bay to, you know, get the title, was that essentially kind of your feeling in terms of you're allowing now this younger guy who shows promise to get the same opportunity now because he's wrestling you? He'll eventually then be able to wrestle other guys who are at a higher caliber because, you know, you're willing to work with them.
I mean, you can never be, like, when you're in that role of champion, you spend the first couple of months, you know, being a little bit selfish and being about, like, how to make this run as cool as possible. And then the mindset does have to shift at a certain point to, okay, what's next? Who's next? How do we start building them? How do I do my job to help get a guy over? You know, because obviously, you know, my role in the company at some point has to change, and I want to help be part of the next stage.
Yeah.
So I really started trying to pay attention, and I didn't feel like there was a lot of guys stepping up. I'm just going to be honest. Like, I was, like, watching it, and I'd have the conversation with Joe where I was like, who is the guy? Who's the next guy? And I didn't know who it was. Obviously, the thing with Bay that really changed things was, up until this point, DeFalco had really been super serious, for the most part, you know, about keeping the heavyweight title the heavyweight title. So then it was like, yeah, Bay's the guy. He's working hard. He's kicking ass. He's firing on cylinders, and he's getting himself really over, but he just wasn't heavyweight. So that was, like, my disconnect with it. But then, you know, looking at the wider landscape of pro wrestling, that was kind of the trend everywhere, where you didn't have to be a big guy. And, like, when I paid attention to the locker room, I was like, you know what? He is the only one who's stepping up to this level. So, yeah, I mean, I was all for it. I was all for, you know, like, finding the best way to do business to help him be successful in that role.
Joe, what was your thought process on, was it pretty much that, you know, Chris's time was coming, and you knew that Alex would be the perfect guy to, you know, give that opportunity?
Actually, it wasn't. The idea was it was time to move the belt again. And at the time, we thought Chris Bay was a guy, but we felt he was probably still a little ways away. And at the time, Carl Fredericks was a guy that we wanted to really give a major push to. So that still would have been a while, because we really had to get behind Carl, and we felt that was going to take time. It was like Carl was over, but he wasn't over enough. I ended up doing a match where we did it for a spot in our Rumble, to where at Against All Odds. So we did a match at the school where the winner got number 30. And the loser got drawn at number one. And what we did was we put two of our most popular guys. It was at that time Graves, and it was Carl. And Carl got a nice pop, and the crowd was solidly behind Graves, which showed that Carl just wasn't ready to jump into the spotlight. But we figured, you know, 4, 6, 8 months down the road, you know, he'd definitely be the guy. But then, you know, he got taken elsewhere, the Inoki Dojo, and, you know, I think I had made the right decision that Carl would have been our next champion, because he's killing it in New Japan, getting to work Ring of Honor. But at that time, it's, as always, it's next man up. And yeah. Chris Bay was up. And, you know, the first year we had Chris win the Rumble, but lose to Hammerstone in the main event. And this year we were going to pull the trigger. And, you know, Chris had all the abilities. You know, he wasn't the biggest guy in the world, but I'm pretty sure he can bench press more than most of our heavyweights, other than Hammerstone and Graves.
So, you know, was that also for you a chance to now take the next step and just kind of reinvent your persona just a little bit more and eventually reunite with Graves and bring in Gallo and, you know, make this one of the best freaking factions I think I've ever seen?
I mean, so that idea was so far off that that wasn't even, you know, a thought. Like, you know, it was a, I mean, reuniting with Graves was always a possibility, but like, I mean, my mind wasn't there, but I definitely, like, the thing is, I felt for a little while, you know, we'd have champions that for some reason or another, whether it was that they were, you know, moving on to the next level, or they just wanted a break from the company when they're done, or they wanted to protect themselves, you know, booking-wise, they'd get the build, they'd suck. They pretty much get their back scratched as champion, and then when it came time to do some scratching, they'd drop the belt and leave.
Yeah.
So I definitely, all I knew was that I wanted to stick around and I wanted to find my spot wherever it was. So I was okay with, you know, just hanging out, and because at that point I don't have to be a centerpiece anymore. You know, right. I'm established. So if I show up, what I do feels a little bit important, regardless right. of if it's been, you know, built or not. So I knew I had that luxury. So I was completely fine stepping a little bit to the side and seeing if anyone wanted to climb up to my spot. But also at the same time, knowing if you don't, then I'm just going to slide right back in and start getting belts and start being top booking again, because, you know, I care about the company a lot. So,
yeah.
I mean, I was just down for whatever came, realistically.
How much fun has it been getting a chance to basically now be, for the last couple years, a front and center type person? person like that, where, you know, you can walk into an arena after not being seen for 3 months and fans will go fucking nuts.
I mean, it's been awesome. It's a testament to good booking. It's a testament to, you know, a promotion that people give a fuck about. And it's a testament to the work that I've put in. So at this point, like, you know, used to, my first trainer used to always, you know, talk about, going, when you finally get to pick the fruits from your labor tree. And I, you know, I planted my labor tree, you know, in 2012 or 2013 in FSW. And, you know, it took a long time for it to grow. So now I'm at the point where I do get to just, when I show up, I get to kind of walk in and, you know, do not what I, whatever I want, but whatever I do is going to kind of feel important.
Right.
But it's also a cool situation because now when I wrestle a guy and I have a, you know, a great match with him, now he feels more important. You know, I had a match with Damian Drake. And, you know, people might have thought, oh, you know, I'm going to go out there and beat him up in 5 minutes. But instead, we went 15 minutes. You know, I tried to make him look a certain way. And I really tried to give people that idea that, man, that guy maybe could someday, you know, be a guy. And to have that in my back pocket as a tool to build other people is really cool.
You know, it's really cool that you brought up someone like him as well, because I think that also shows that you're at the point where you can identify when you see that passion in someone. And I think that is so respectable. And I can see why you're a locker room leader, because you're not looking at it from the eyes of me. You're looking at it the eyes of the business. And I think that's amazing. What does it mean to you as of right now, since we haven't really had any real live wrestling, you know, taking place for months and months and months, to have wrestled essentially the, you know, the last Mecha card before this coronavirus hit?
So, I mean, this has just been rough, but I understand, like, it's almost like a reset button, you know, because when we come back, like, we're not just going to slide into old feuds. We're not just going to, you know, pick up where we left off. It's almost going to be like a reestablishment period.
I got a good one for you coming soon, Hammerstone.
Is it? Don't tell me it's a lemons on a pole match with many lemons.
No. Think of Lex Luger and Yokozuna, brother. you got those USA tights going.
I'm ready to roll, brother.
You might have to come out of the woodwork. I got a guy from the past looking to make the return, jacked out of his mind.
But yeah, it's exciting because like we said earlier, like, FSW is a place that has a presence and that, you know, people know when wrestling comes back that it's going to be back, and people are going to be curious as to what goes down there and what kind of statements they start making in the industry again. So, you know, it's a good feeling to know that I'll get to be a part of that.
Funniest Joe DeFalco story that you have?
Oh, man, this off the bat might be hard.
Every time I talk about Evan Daniels makes him hilariously laugh.
that is true. His ability. And so a lot of people don't realize, like, that, you know, DeFalco just tells it like it is. Like, there's some promoters who you work for, and they just, you go up to them and go, how was my match? And they just go, it was good. But realistically, they're thinking, like, man, it sucked. And there's been times when I've gotten through the back and DeFalco was like, well, that was the shit. Or he's like, why'd you do this? Why didn't you do that? But then on the flip side of that, there'd be times where I came through the back and he goes, oh, yeah, I didn't even know you do all those big suplex throws. Why don't you do more of those? That could be your thing. You need to do more power moves. You know, so he really gives the critique of what he wants, because at the end of the day, like, if you suck, he's going to say, don't do that again. But when you do good, he's going to say, do that again. And Evan Daniels just, he could not take the joking at all. So like what I always like tell guys is I'm like, listen, you don't, if you're the top dog in Arizona, you don't just get to get on the road and then be the top dog everywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, but Evan Daniels did get like a high profile singles match on a casino show.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of Vegas guys are still in six-man scrambles on casino shows. So he worked his way up to that point. And like, that was Joe DeFalco going, hey, I see you're working hard. You're starting to get over. Here's a singles match. You might not be going over, but a lot of guys want this spot. And then Evan Daniels still got boo-boo face about it.
And you know, coming out. He's the Ben Stein of professional wrestling. But I'll tell you one little known Evan Daniels fact. When Hammerstone was posting about his goals of being FSW champion, that was number two. The number one goal was actually beating Evan Daniels, because Evan Daniels has the best win-loss record versus Hammerstone in the history of professional wrestling.
That might actually be true.
Joe, what are like one favorite story about Alex?
I'm going to tell you a couple of favorite stories.
Awesome.
Okay, the first one is we're doing a show in Arizona. It's the precursor to the Mecca. It is called the IWF. It has the biggest names in the business. Now, this is around 2014, I believe. It's the first show. We got Ricochet versus Austin Aries and Shelton Benjamin versus John Morrison. And Shelton's in part of the booking committee with Johnny the Bull. And he wants to get Tyshawn Prince over as a monster. So he wants to have a handicap match. And Shelton's got some clown that he brought in. I don't even know who the guy was. Never thought he did anything. But I'm like, hey, I got a guy we use all the time. He's from Arizona. You know, he's going to work cheap. And so we did a three-on-one handicap match with Hammerstone and two other guys against Tyshawn. Well, Tyshawn basically runs rampant and destroys them all in probably a minute or so or whatever. And after the fact, I remember taking Hammerstone and Graves. I think Graves was into the office because it was right before a school show that day. And I kind of lambasted Hammerstone about helping out and doing some stuff. And he goes, you know, to be honest, Joe, you know, I think I'm better than that. And I told him, I agree 1,000%, but this is what we needed you for. It was an opportunity to get into that show, do what was necessary, and then by doing that and showing your professionalism, you know, now we can kind of utilize you more. And it was like, because in FSW at that time, he was getting a pretty good push. So, you know, and I'm pretty sure he understood where I was coming from after the fact, because of the fact that he is so, you know, competitive, that he just went in there in front of, you know, the hometown fans and basically just got buried. And it was just what we needed from him. And the thing is, even though he didn't really like it, he still did it. And that's yeah. what the most important thing is. So he may not realize that, but by doing what we needed him to do and doing that, it gave me more confidence down the line to do that. The second one was, there was a man whose name cannot be said on podcasts any longer, who was part of FSW for a long time. And I remember there was some Facebook post that got kind of rude. Hammerstone made a comment. And I remember before the show, Hammerstone got into the guy's face and he said, listen, bro, I don't want to have a problem with you, but if you want to have a problem, we could take care of it right now. And at that point, I realized this motherfucker is the leader of this locker room. Of course, the other guy shut the fuck up and didn't say a word. And again, that goes you know, toward Hammerstone's character that he wasn't no bullshit Facebook warrior. You know, the only other time was I told him, don't mess with Eli Everfly. He might whoop your ass and it'll really ruin your reputation. Those are the real three that I can remember well. And my favorite Hammerstone moment was when Graves won the cash in the case, and then the same day they won the tag titles against the 1%. It was shocking enough that Graves had turned on Sepa to let Hammerstone win the Nevada State. But when we did the title change in the tag match, people legitimately had their jaws dropped because they couldn't believe that was actually happening. Yeah, so that was my favorite moment.
Yeah, that, and also to kind of reiterate what we talked about earlier, how Joe said, like, we were kind of like uncrowned champions. Like, you know, I never was bitter about that. I was never, you know, boo-boo face saying, like, oh, why didn't we win the belts? But it looking back, it did kind of feel that way. For it to come full circle and for us to win the belts on that night, it was a super fun experience.
But you were tag team champions in Vegas. Not only did you win the 3PW title, you got free barbecue at the guy's house. So I guess that counts for something.
Yeah, for something.
Well, as we kind of wrap up here, you know, what has it meant to you to have this kind of relationship with Joe? Because, you know, as it's kind of been said, and as we know, when you work for many different promotions and you have many different bosses, you have to kind of, you know, protect your own interest, your own brand, but also do business. That's what it is. How is it having that relationship with a guy like Joe where he's serious, he gets the things done, he has a great platform to do it, but you can also joke around and understand that, you know, as serious as it is to do business, he can still have such a good time with the guys?
I mean, at this point, I just really enjoy it because it's like, it's gotten to a point where I've gotten busy. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll put it this way. I'll fly to the East Coast, you know, on a red eye Friday night, fly back Saturday morning, not sleep, get in a car and drive to a school show in Vegas. And I'm miserably tired. My girlfriend's going, why don't you just not do that show? And I'm like, because I owe FSW. Like, I will always owe FSW.
He said, I really need that $20, Joe.
But, you know, in the same regard, when Joe's been booking a storyline and I'm going to miss a key part of it, he understands. He goes, you know what? I wish I could have you, but I understand. So, and he doesn't go, okay, well, that means I guess I can't ever do anything with you. You know, so it's cool that we've evolved to the point where, you know, I know I want to be there as much as possible for him, but he respects, you know, that I do have other stuff going on. And, you know, like I said, you know, when I come there, I give it my best, and he always tries to have something good for me. But at the same time, you know, he hasn't held it against me that, you know, other stuff has been going on. So it's cool in that regard.
Joe, quick question for you. When
I can elaborate on what you're going to ask already. Okay, the first part of Hammerstone's working for Joe is it's very costly to him because as he has progressed in this business, obviously, he's making more and more and more money. But the thing is, he's not a guy who shies away from the school shows where he knows the money's not that good. And he's still willing to come out and do it. And, you know, we've had issues with some of our main guys as they've gotten bigger. They kind of didn't really want to work because, you know, the money wasn't there. I'm forever in his debt. And I'd say he's forever in my debt. But he continues to almost prioritize us, despite the fact that somebody's going to fly him, get him a hotel, pay him really good, and, you know, if I book him first, normally he doesn't really cancel on me unless it's a major booking. And there's nothing more appreciative than that because of the fact is, you know, he's trying to make a living. You know, I don't even know if he has a real job anymore because, you know, he used to, but now he kind of made wrestling a living until everything went down. You know, he's a champion in MLW.
Yeah.
And he still acts exactly the same way. You know, he toured Japan. You know, nothing has made me more proud than watching Hammerstone and Bay and Cross. And it's easier to say about Bay and Cross because we trained them from scratch. So we had a lot of time invested in him. With Hammerstone, you know, he was this unpolished gem that I brought in and I saw something in, and he continued to exceed all the expectations. And, you know, there's no doubt he could be in any company he wants to be. You know, if his dream job is WWE, I'm pretty sure he'll be able to get there because his work ethic is second to none. Evan Daniels taught him well, and he's progressed to, you know, like I said, he's held almost all the titles in FSW. You know, there's always going to be a place for him, and he's always going to be one of the main guys. You know, I'm working on the reinvention idea as we speak. And, you know, I'm looking, you know, hopefully we can get started soon, and it's going to be great to have Hammerstone, you know, back. You know, we're looking to do some things, and initially we're probably not going to bring in a lot of out-of-state talent, but, you know, Hammerstone and Graves will be the first call that's made.
Final question for you, Hammerstone. When you hit that peak of your career, and you are headlining WrestleMania, is Joe DeFalco getting tickets, or does Joe have to drive and put out of his pocket?
I'll give him some nosebleeds on will call.
Tickets. I better get a spot on the microphone when him and Cross are on there saying, "This one goes out to my mentor and the man who made me what I am today, Joe DeFalco."
I mean, that speech is going to take place, but it's going to be for Evan Daniels.
Or 12% of the cut, one or the other.
And final question for you, Joe. Alex Hammerstone, FSW Hall of Famer?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, there's such a great crew of guys that have been around with us for a really long time. And Hammerstone's legacy, you know, if he lost 30 matches in a row to Evan Daniels starting next week, his legacy would still be, you know, what it is. And without a doubt, he's probably, you know, I guess you could say it ain't a first ballot Hall of Famer because I picked the Hall of Fame because I'm the one who sees absolutely everything that goes on. So, you know, it actually means something when you get into our Hall of Fame. Yeah. And, you know, Hammerstone, we like to not do the non-retired guys. So he's got a long way away. So, you know, he's got another good 15, 20 years in the business. I could be dead and my son and Rocky T could be running FSW into the ground.
With that note, I just want to remind everyone, you can follow Evan Daniels at The Evan Daniels on Twitter. and Hammerstone, you know, thank you so much for your time, brother. I know you're busy. And it's just a pleasure to have you join Joe and just kind of bullshit and tell it like it is. And it's been great. Thank you so much, brother.
It was a good time with you guys.
And Joe, thank you as always once again. Any news at all about FSW being able to reopen? Or are we still in that hold with the state?
Well, you know, the governor hasn't talked in a month from what I've seen, but We hear that it's going to be Hammerstone's birthday soon, so we might have a birthday party for Hammerstone at the FSW Arena really soon.
I love that idea. That would be awesome. All right, everyone listening, thank you very much. Remember, the truth is here on the DeFalco Files every week. And please subscribe, download, share, review, let your friends know, have people listen to the DeFalco Files, the number one show from the Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting. And do we expect anything else, the number one from Joe DeFalco? No, not at all. Until next time, everyone, take care.